Holy dooly, everyone. It's a marketing episode, and my guest today, Scott Murray, is here to teach us how to humanize our content, how to connect with our audience on a personal level, especially when we are a company or a business that they may perceive as just an engine that wants to sell them things. We want to talk with our audience and create content for our organic and our ads that brings their walls down a little bit and lets them know, hey, there's a real person behind here who wants to help you. We have your best interests at heart. So how do we communicate that as a business? Well, Scott has 20 years of experience in this area. He's got a master's degree in this area, and that makes him infinitely more qualified to talk about anything than me ever. We reference a whole bunch of different pop culture examples where you might have seen this happen before. We talk about some very big name brands and companies who you'll recognize and how they're using or not using these principles, and basically how you can start as a coach or a business to humanize your content and really start to connect with your audience, making that sales conversation so much easier when it comes down to it. So I really hope you like this one, guys. Great fun podcast. Here he is, Scott Murray, on Coaches to the Moon.
This is Coaches to the Moon, the only podcast you need to skyrocket your coaching business and create true impact on the world. Here's your host, Alex Morris.
Welcome back to the Coaches to the Moon podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, we're back again, heading over to the United States. My guest today, Scott Murray, is a humanized content strategist, and we're going to figure out what that means. He's also the host of the Marketing Superpower Hour and a guy I'm really, really keen to talk to about content marketing and consumer-focused messaging, things that he's been an expert in for over 20 years. And we're really glad to finally have him on the show. Scott, straight out of Fort Worth. Great to have you here, mate.
Hey, it's great to be with you, Alex. Thank you for your time today. It's good to be with you and your audience.
Yes, well, Mom, thanks for watching.
Hi, Mom.
Yeah. So, actually, I don't think she watches my content anymore. I think I used to swear too much for her, but I tone it down for the podcast because you never know who is listening.
Well, you know, sometimes bleeping swear words actually makes it funny sometimes.
Well, yeah. So, well, that's
you can kill two birds with one stone.
Bleeping things that aren't even swear words just to.
Right, even better.
Yeah. Brilliant, man. Just before anything, it looks like you're a real comic book buff. You got some Batmans around. You got what's the name of that? The Trinity on your shirt, Wonder Woman, Batman, and Superman.
Yes, this is showing also how old I am, because this is Christopher Reeve, Linda Carter, and Adam West.
Wow.
Who I grew up watching. What's interesting, and this is kind of true about, really how even comic book culture has become so mainstream. I'm not really well versed in the books. What's interesting about that, though, is I actually hosted a podcast for a while, for like 3 or 4 years, with two experts that did know the books, and I would ask the newbie questions, and they would answer the questions as experts. But all of my fandom came around TV and film, because I was too ADD to sit down and read something. So TV and film did it for me.
Even when it's a comic book with speech bubbles and wow, blammy. Yeah, brilliant. No, I can agree with you. We all have our bookshelf full of books behind us on these podcasts, but I can guarantee you I've not read a single one of those books, and I probably never will. There's cookbooks down the bottom. The bottom is my cookbooks, and I love them.
Cookbooks, okay.
I was a chef for 10 years, and you kind of...
Nice.
Well, I was a chef for more than 10 years, and you kind of collect cookbooks from restaurants you admire, that sort of thing. And you very rarely cook recipes out of them start to finish, but you definitely take ideas, not unlike, I'd imagine, the books behind you on your shelf, where these marketing books, business books, a lot of them, they've got chapters which relate to certain things. And that's the way I feel like I consume books and content, is I go to the chapter about what I'm struggling with today. I don't do much cover to cover. How about you?
I've gotten better about reading books. And part of that has been just how life has changed, really, in recent years. Back when I had longer commutes and I was driving to work, audio books were better for me then. And because my commute a lot of times would would be anywhere from like 45 minutes, sometimes an hour. So that's plenty of time to listen to something. And on the way home, it's plenty of time to listen to something. But then I haven't like gone into the office for a long period of time now since, you know, the pandemic. And that around that time, I started pursuing my master's degree. And of course, they want you to read so that you can write papers and things. So then I started doing Kindle, and I was really kind of very much like right brain people have to do. I had to kind of develop my own system as to how I would read things and keep them in my head and whatnot. And I really found that, you know, the way I could read things, even on the screen digitally, downloading them on Kindle helped me read books I needed to read. But a lot of folks, I'm behind on a lot of books. I mean, my wife is actually a hardcore reader and always has been. But she's still got tons of books on her shelf that she that she hasn't gotten to, but plans to get to. So I'm reading more than I was 3 or 4 years ago, but I still have a lot of reading to do.
Well, well done, Scott Murray. I think we can all take a page out of that book, excuse the pun, that we need to just maybe force ourselves to do it a little more. It does seem to be a skill that is fading into oblivion. Let's touch on your master's degree quickly, mate, because you know, you've been running businesses. You know what you're doing. You've probably got a nice lifestyle with your wife and your dog, and you can just kind of run your business, make some marketing, create some content, run your podcast. What drove you to go and get a master's degree in interdisciplinary studies, and what does that mean?
Yeah, so the master's itself was in interdisciplinary studies, but the track was professional communication, which covered communication and social media advertising, writing, presentations. I was actually fortunate enough to be one of the last people to take that track at Southern Utah. So I got in at a good time. There's also another option where you could actually get a master's in professional communication and almost take the exact same thing. But I liked how I could pick things that were more of a fit for me through the interdisciplinary track. And this was right around the time where I really started to evolve more into kind of a consultant role. And I've always, you know, my wife and I both are people that really value just continuing to learn, growth mindset, as they say. And I never think I've learned everything. And one of the things that really helps me help people is by studying and learning what's happening and adding more depth to what I can provide people. And by the way, when I even work with clients, I learn from them too. So there's a lot of value if you pursue learning. And my bachelor's degree was in 98. So I felt like I could go back and see if I could add some depth to the communication side of marketing, because I felt like communication was becoming a much bigger deal when it came to marketing. And it really did help. There was a lot of things there that were obviously very, very familiar to me, but I also saw just how many areas communication crosses over and its importance. Like not only social media and advertising, but I also had a class in public relations. And a lot of the things that were focused on in public relations and crisis communication are the very same things we have to consider when we're talking to people in advertising. And we can screw things up the same way as we do in advertising. So I was amazed at how much crossover is really there today. And then I was also amazed at just how many in-depth studies have actually been done in the last 10 years about what's changed in marketing. And that really helped me add a lot more context when I talk to people as to the depth in which things have changed, just even in the last 10 years. And that's very, very helpful to be able to have some of that reinforcement to be able to bring to the table.
Yeah, interesting. Thanks for such a detailed response, mate. I think that clearly marketing, I mean, so 1998 was when you finished your bachelor's degree in marketing. Is that right?
It was in a Bachelor of Arts in Applied Sciences in mass communications and broadcast journalism.
Okay, sweet.
As if I wasn't dating myself enough, I was the last person in my class or last class to take a video course on analog editing. So I actually taught myself how to do Final Cut Pro and digital editing after I finished college. So yeah.
Wow.
So it was good to go back and revisit some things all those years later.
So reel to reel, cutting physical tape, that sort of thing.
not didn't have to cut anything, but okay. It was the things where you had the two knobs, and if you know, like today, you can actually erase something and reconnect it and do it over and over and over again, whereas this way you're actually recording over the tape, and you better not have to do it more than once. Once is bad enough, because you start getting into second, third, fourth generation loss, and you might as well just flush the whole thing. So it was really nice to be able to get into an area of editing where you didn't have to worry about generational loss anymore.
Goodness me. I do think about that now that we're starting to, you know, watch, now that we've got our little kids and cartoons and Disney came into what we watch. I look back at just old school Disney movies and just think, how on earth did they do any of this? So I remember Space Jam, where they put cartoons and people in the same movie for the first time.
I mean, and I remember one of the movies I remember going to see in the theater as a kid was Pete's Dragon, which was revolutionary for its time to have this animated dragon talking to Mickey Rooney and, you know, all these people. And even in my early days of podcasting, I got to interview Glenn Keane, who is a Disney legend. He was the one who created The Little Mermaid and Tarzan and Aladdin. And it was fascinating listening to him talk about, you know, how they were drawing these things and how his dad was actually one of the creators and of the family circus, which was an old comic strip in the newspapers. And it was really fascinating to listen to not only him talk about that, but also just the value of how they created animation back then and how it still really has, that the art of it really has a lot of value today even.
Totally. It's really nice to see an animated show these days that's not, you know, computer animated. It's, well, obviously, there's, you know what I mean, 2D rather than 3D, I suppose. And as a parent, it's very refreshing when you can see someone's put effort and time into the rendering, into the color scheme in a show. Not that I'm a art buff or anything, but you can just tell when someone's just said, this is straight to video. This is straight to the streaming platform. We are putting a lot less effort into this Christmas special. And and you just sit there like, oh God, girls, can we please go outside? So, okay, brilliant, man. Not to get onto just the history of film, film and cartoons, although that could be a very fun podcast.
And I'm always throwing pop culture references into marketing concepts anyway. That's one of the reasons why I thought some of the things I'm doing around that works. Plus, it's just so much more fun to put it in that context. And sometimes it makes a lot more sense when we get out of some of the more, you know, repetitive things we see out there explained, to be able to say, well, try looking at it this way. And it's, you know, pop culture and movies, sometimes they give us some really powerful messages and some ideas, and we don't even realize it sometimes.
Well, this is something I wanted to talk to you about today, because you mentioned humanized content strategy, and you were talking about the power of humanizing your content and personalizing it. I wanted to talk to you about the people using memes in their advertising these days, taking a famous meme template that everyone's used to seeing and then using it in their ads. And I'm not sure if that's something you partake in too much or how you feel about it, but I've never made a meme style ad that's worked, but some of my favorite ads, I guess they just blend into the rest of your newsfeed and they don't feel like an ad, which is what makes them so effective. What do you think?
Absolutely. I mean, even outside of ads, I think memes and other things associated with them can make you stand out on your social feed, because it's like, you know, it's funny when we're in a consumer frame of mind. And I think what happens sometimes is when we get in that marketer frame of mind, we suddenly lose too much of our consumer brain. And that's why we end up creating things that if we were at home, we wouldn't even engage with on our own. So why are we making it at work? Because part of that brain's already turned off. And I think that's part of what is valuable about what you're saying. Because it can show personality, it can show your sense of humor, it can show your creativity. What ends up happening though is you have folks that'll say, "Well, you know, we're a serious business. We can't put a meme on our social feed." But the thing is it's not like if your audience finds that funny when they're at home, they suddenly don't find it funny when they're at work. So there is definite value to that, especially if you can be creative with things related to your business and things related to the message you're trying to get across. Because think of it this way. I mean, if you're writing it the same way your competition is all the time and your social media feed's just, you know, basically a rotating billboard, I mean, that's not going to get the attention. At the end of the day, if you made them laugh, you're showing that you're a little bit different from everybody else. And you might be surprised at how effective that point you're making with that meme is actually resonating with people, along with showing that you have some humanity behind that social media feed.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, we started doing it with emails a few years back based off of some really successful ones where we stopped putting any branding in our emails. We started, you know, doing lots of just unpunctuated lowercase subject lines. And like, I think famously the most successful, from what I've heard, email marketing campaign ever was from Barack Obama's fundraising campaign or something like that. And the subject line was, "Hey." And so, you know, it was, "Hey," coming from Barack Obama, not, you know, "Here's three reasons why, to, you know, America needs you," that sort of thing. It was just said, "Hey." And now we're starting to see that in socials, the way you kind of just said, big companies putting just a cheeky real person running their socials. And so you'll see companies having like Blockbuster Video, their Twitter account is hilarious because they're trolling Netflix all the time and that sort of thing. And when you see real people behind a company, I think it is hugely important. And just like we spoke about before we started recording, we were talking about how you can't record a podcast with a toddler in the room and how people struggle to, you know, go on live news during the lockdowns and there's a cat or, you know, their partner walks behind in their boxes. And my mum, when she's here babysitting, she always gets nervous about that. She's like, "You don't want your customers to hear your kids." And I'm like, "Bring them in," because yeah, the amount of trust I get from my clients, being that I'm just a dude here in a room and that side of my office is a nightmare because that's where all the kids stuff gets put. You know, people start to really, they humanize. And I think humanization of companies is massively important. So I'm really glad we're on this train now. So Scott Murray Online is the, you know, moniker that you trade under. And you're a humanized content strategist there. So this is a consulting business for other companies on their marketing. Is that right?
Yeah. And that can come in any number of ways. I mean, you have people that might be launching a social media or a content plan. Maybe they're a startup and they're saying, "Gosh, you know, it's so overwhelming out there now. And we're just getting started with social media. We only have limited resources. We're trying to figure out how we're even going to be able to compete out there. You know, what can we do?" And, you know, taking a very humanized approach to your content is something that really can give you an edge. And a lot of times it's because your competition probably isn't doing it. And that's the truth, because, you know, it, one of the things that marketers fall into all the time is, and this is not a marketer thing, this is just the marketing version of it. It's very human. You know, we get comfortable, the brain gets comfortable in its processes and the way it thinks about things. And it gets so comfortable, it doesn't think it has to learn anything new. And suddenly marketing becomes almost like this science that never changes. So we're handling SEO the same way. We're handling the way we write content the same way, because that's how marketers do it. And they're afraid to try anything else, despite what some things might be pointing to out there. So it is at a time where it's 10 times harder, 20 times harder to compete in the area of Google ranking and SEO and things of that nature. Being able to connect with somebody who's looking for answers and looking for an organization that is not trying to constantly sell them or not put the same things in front of them can really be a big differentiator. So it can be somebody on one side that just needs to launch something, but it can also be a company that says, "We've been doing this the old-fashioned way with old-fashioned messaging, corporate marketing messaging, or we're looking to expand and really start connecting with people. How can we do that?" And sometimes there's a lot involved there, but sometimes I've talked to people that said, "Here's our social media page. We know we need to be human here, and we know this sounds kind of stiff and corporate. So what does it look like to change it?" And sometimes I'll say, change this to this, 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 and this, and then they get it, and then they don't need me anymore. So there's all kinds of levels of help out there that can be really valuable to bidding on the organization.
Terrible business model, isn't it? To be so good, people don't need you anymore.
but I think it they're so good. That's the thing is, you know, is you go from that mindset that they're the hero of the story, not you. And you're just helping them guide there. And then when they figure it out, they're good at what they do. And like I said, usually I'm learning from something from them as well.
I love that. We've got a client right now. He's a physiotherapist. And he says that the physio model is usually that you want people to kind of come back every week for as long as possible. And his marketing is that after 8 weeks, I never want to see you again, is basically the way he's talking about it. So moving back to what you just mentioned about humanizing content and helping companies, right? Something we see a lot in the coaching space, well, in our marketing, is we get a couple of different levels of coaches and service-based businesses like that. The majority are people like you or I. We trade under our own names, are we're the face of our businesses, and so our content comes from us, and then people work with us. We're part of the sales process and the delivery process. But then you have another level, and maybe they're slightly bigger, or they're slightly more of a professional service, and they're faceless. They're not. They're called, you know, Excelsior, or I just made that up. Or
because that's a cool name. Excelsior. That's Dan Lee inspired name.
So we'll choose Excelsior. And I often find that they're a lot harder to get engagement for and build trust for these people. And sometimes it's because there's not one person behind it. And sometimes it's because maybe you've got someone starting, they have a 9-to-5 and they're starting a secondary business and they don't want to be the face of that business. So in terms of humanizing the content of a brand rather than a personal brand, where can we begin? And do you have any sort of tangible tips of things people can be posting when they personally don't want to get themselves on camera?
Where they do want to get themselves on camera, or they don't?
Where they're not, for one reason or another, maybe they just don't have a spokesperson, or they actively don't want to be the spokesperson or an ambassador. How can we get started with that one, Scott Murray?
Well, I mean, first off, I think about how there's probably a lot of people out there that are successful. In fact, I know a couple that are very successful on video, and they didn't think they'd be good for it either. And part of that kind of goes back to what we were saying. Sometimes we have this visual in our head that if we go on video, we have to speak perfectly. We can't make mistakes. We have to be like, you know, the nightly news as far as our delivery is concerned. But it's really not true. In fact, even when I work with people on things like podcasts, I tell them, you know, everybody talks in form in when it comes to editing, they all talk about, well, we got to get rid of the uhs and ums. I'm like, well, okay, well, yeah, get rid of some of them. But if you get rid of all of them, then people think you're a robot, that you're not talking like a normal person. That's really what people want to see, because people speaking perfectly on camera and perfectly on TV, I mean, they've rehearsed, they've got scripts, and when it comes to commercials, they're promoting something and they know exactly what they're going to say, versus instead of sitting there talking to someone like you would if you met them at a conference, is perfectly acceptable. And if you can do that, if you can talk to another person, you can be on video. Now, one of the things that might actually also help, let's take social media, for example. This is actually a situation where I think people have asked this question, because it's like, how can you humanize when obviously, when we post something on social media, our logo, you know, is right next to what we say. And you know, do people feel like they're talking back to our logo? Well, maybe, kind of. But at the same time, you could take a professional photo of yourself or whoever is going to be your spokesperson and put that personality into the tweets and responses. And they're just like, it's almost like Jake from State Farm. You know, it's like, this is Frank from this company. And suddenly now they know they're talking to a person. And the other thing that I've seen people do, if they don't want to go that far, is they create a, like a character. They create like a mascot, a character strictly for X, or strictly for one of those where you're constantly interacting. And there's some fun and creativity in that. I think, what was it? Was it Moz that had the, you know, Roger, the robot that was always interacting and talking to people, and they always wanted to see what he would say, but he would always give really, really good advice as well. So there's also opportunities in other areas to humanize, but really even beyond putting a face there, it's just a matter of rethinking how we talk about things. I mean, even Forrester recently did a pretty in-depth study showing that people want brands to start talking to them like they're a person and talking to them like they were having a conversation. And if you just start thinking in terms of that alone, you're probably going to look at some of that marketing copy and go, well, that's not how I would say it if I was standing in front of somebody, and start figuring out ways to really sound a little more human and conversational, because the corporate stuff is what people associate with advertising and trying to get something out of them instead of actually talking to them so they can help them.
Mm, very, very good. My word. The examples you're giving, I'm starting to see them all the time. I didn't really think about it, but even when my bank, you know, when I need to do something on my bank, it's like log into the app and talk to, you know, I don't know, Susie, that sort of thing. Susie's a chatbot, but I'm talking to an artificial intelligence chatbot, I'd imagine, who's got lots of pre-programmed answers, but talks to me a little bit like I'm a person. And even though I'm not, it's slightly nicer. It's slightly nicer. And that's a bank trying their best, and they'll never be good at it because they're a bank. But but in terms of, I think that's a really good idea. And the human element is fantastic. Because we do follow people, don't we? We follow people to the biggest example I can really give is, I don't believe many people are probably nowhere near as many people are following SpaceX on Twitter as they are Elon Musk, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think he's the perfect example of this. No matter, as a very polarizing figure, love him or hate him, he's humanizing these insanely big corporations by posting memes and just trolling people and just being a dork, just being a tech nerd sort of thing. And from that, I believe that's a huge factor to his companies gaining so much traction and success. I'd imagine a human factor. Maybe he's not human, so who knows? It's probably a bad example of humanizing because he's most likely a robot. But okay, so that's great. So moving from that onto sort of, I suppose, the engagement of looking at things as a consumer rather than as a marketer. That's tough as well. And this is something we see a lot in the coaching space. Coaches is who we work with. And they do struggle a lot with marketing because I think the more you learn about a topic, you kind of assume other people's knowledge to be matching yours to an extent. And so we come up with offers that we think people will want based off of what we want. And I'm guilty of it all the time. Us as marketers, we probably might think of things like decrease your cost per click. No one wants that, really. They want more leads.
Right.
You know, I've got an offer that we're running right now for a sales agency. And it's like, business owners, never make a sales call again and increase your revenue. And I was like, why is this ad not popping? And my friend, who's a squillionaire marketer, he's like, because they don't want to not get off the sales calls. They just want the clients. They don't mind how they get them. They want the end outcome. They don't mind how they get there. And so I was like, you're exactly right. And I'm just kind of looking at things as what I would want. So in terms of looking at things as a consumer, how can we flip into that mindset? Because it's when you're inside your own content all the time and inside your own head and often surrounded by people who talk and think like you, how do we flip into the mindset of the person mm-hmm. who's buying from us to start that conversation and make it more effective?
Well, one of the things that we're learning just from, you know, a big wide view of how companies are trying to evolve both inside and out today. I mean, on the inside, we're hearing things about quietly quitting. We're hearing things about broken culture syndrome. we're finding out that there are more and more challenges of employees being engaged and invested in what they do and feeling like they're making a difference, or they're afraid to bring something up in a meeting, things like that. If those kind of challenges are happening, if there's a lack of humanized communication internally as a culture, there's going to be a struggle for those people to be able to communicate externally, especially the ideals and the messaging of the brand from a humanized perspective as well, especially if everything's running more like a machine versus, you know, a humanized culture. And that plays a big role in this. And we're finding that a lot more CEOs and CMOs are talking about the importance of having your culture in a good place in order to be able to really maximize what everybody's talking about. And we're talking about everybody in the organization. I mean, one of the most impactful things I've heard Robert Rose say about this is, you know, the days are gone where you can have that one customer service agent, you know, out of the last 6 to 8 weeks that had that great day, you know, that great moment where they just killed it and everybody celebrates it. And there's all this great feedback from this one person. Now everybody has to be able to do that on a regular basis to give that consistent experience. So I would say it starts with culture, and the culture really trying to do things differently. That might mean you have to change some of that internal terminology. The very word marketing has words like sales and promotion in it. So all you're doing internally is thinking that you're creating content to sell and promote. And then you read that research that says that that's what consumers hate. They're paying more and more money to block that stuff away. Then it's a self-defeating prophecy, isn't it? So it might be, I've talked to people sometimes about changing the terminology. And if you think about that, I mean, there's very successful, you're talking about coaches, they're very successful motivational speakers. And that's one of their key things to get people to elevate their life or what they're doing is changing the words they use to think about something. Marketers can do the exact same thing. And, you know, we all have experiences as consumers. And if we just take a moment sometimes, if we're going to keep this kind of ground level, the simplest thing we can do is just put ourselves in their shoes. I actually just came from content marketing world. And I watched a session, I think it was the session on empathy, which is a huge component of this, where I always said, put yourself in the consumer's shoes. This person actually said, no, you don't want to be in their shoes. You want to be walking with them and experiencing what they're experiencing, which I also think is valuable. But the idea is, and I had to do this even as a creative when I was just doing things to entertain people, like even creating my first podcast, I had to listen to my first episode and go, okay, if I just listen to that, why do I care to come back? What did I get out of it? What were the takeaways? What did I learn? Do I feel like if I take my whole producer host side out of this and thought all I did was listen to that, and let's just say I'm listening to 6 other shows like it, why am I going to put this one in my routine? And I couldn't answer the question. And I thought, well, if I can't answer the question, I need to go back to the drawing board. And my 7th episode was very different from my first. So there's a lot you can do there. You know, you can change the terminology, you can change the culture, but you can also just start rethinking that first 2 or 3 steps when the content's been created. Take a step back and go, okay, if I see this on social media, why am I going to stop scrolling? Or why am I going to lower the barriers that make me skeptical of advertising and stop for a second and think, I should click on this, not I better not click on this because it's probably clickbait, like that last thing I just dealt with, or you know, something like that. What is it that in this content that's going to make me do whatever it is that content is designed to do? And if we have trouble answering that question, then it might require some fine tuning. And, you know, you have to test this stuff. You have to test this stuff. And then you also have to get to know your audience and your consumers, find ways to get to know them, find ways to do research on them. So you're not making that mistake where you think you know what they want, but you don't. And then you find out when you're able to talk to them or you're finding ways to connect with them that they're talking about a whole nother thing, or they might be talking about the same problem. They just use a different language than you, and it wasn't going to connect until you changed the language.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you said so many things just then, but that last part of people might not talk the same way as you is really huge for writing social content, whether organic or paid, I think. Especially going back to that coaching thing we talked about before, where a lot of coaches, because they've studied Where's that music? Sorry, some music just popped up on my
it's okay.
screen. So a lot of coaches will talk about they'll be making content for people as if they've been in the personal development space for a long time. And they'll be talking about things like your soul's essence or your, you know, just assuming that people meditate or journal or have a morning routine, that sort of thing, where I'd say the vast majority of people don't. And that's probably why movies like The Secret were so popular for people. It was like their first step into a realm outside of mainstream thinking, where The Secret, being that law of attraction movie, I'm not sure if you've seen it or heard of it, but it was very... It was huge. It was massive. It was a book written by a lady called Rhonda Byrne, and it was basically the law of attraction. If you think about something enough, you'll create it. And it was simplifying this enormous concept into just basically that sentence. If you think about your future, you know, think about what you want, you'll get it. And so many people fell into that, and it was hugely successful. We overcomplicate topics because of the way that we think and the language that we use. And one of the best pieces of advice I got given, not that I read lately, by Alex Hormozy. You know, he's a big marketing guy. He's done millions of dollars in gyms and that sort of thing. He says just like, try and break everything down to a third grade level, that sort of thing. And these days, what I do is I'll write what I want to write, put it into ChatGPT and say, write this for a 12-year-old. And it does it. And it's not always the way I want to say it, but it's right. it's so great at explaining things. I've got a client who's teaches people to trade the markets. I don't know anything about trading the markets. So I put in what he's told me and I get it to explain it to me. And then that's the way I'll explain it to the market as well. And I get ChatGPT to teach me about support and resistance as if I was 12 years old. And it gave me some bouncing ball analogy. And I was like, that's freaking amazing. I'm going to use this. And then so that becomes my marketing. So definitely we're getting a lot of tools, mate, these days. And your concept of walking alongside your audience is huge. Marketing and sales are words that you're trying to not necessarily avoid, but, you know, have people question if they can use other terminologies. Is there anything that you would use in terms of marketing and sales to make that language a little less aggressive and maybe help people to take their walls down a little bit when you're in these realms of business?
Yeah. I mean, sometimes you could take something. I'm trying to remember. I actually have a list of words, but I haven't memorized them all just yet that I've used. I know that instead of using words like conversion, because if you think about it, conversion in daily language, if I say, you know, we're going to work to convert you, you're probably going to be like, excuse me. But we use it so freely in marketing, Les, like we got a conversion, you know. But then there's things that we could say when we start talking about lead generation or conversion. Maybe what we can take the same concept, which is we're trying to start something. We're trying to, you know, if it's lead nurturing, for example, instead of lead nurture, because it's still, you know, lead almost makes for a very not so human term to say that, you know, someone is a lead. But maybe what we could say instead is we're working on a relationship foundation, because we're taking that first step to build a deeper connection with this consumer or this business, so that not only will they trust us and eventually purchase something from us, but maybe that's an ongoing purchase. Or maybe it's something where we've built it up in so much trust over time that even when they're not perhaps purchasing something from us, they're telling all their friends and associates, hey, you have this problem. These people are the ones you need to go to, because the good feeling that they have about your business doesn't end after they bought something. They also feel good about that purchase and they feel good about the impact it's making. So there's an increasing importance these days on making that feeling of connection to the brand last beyond just that purchase, because there's so many long-term benefits to be made out of that. So you can probably come up with several terminologies that still you know, you're still trying to achieve the same thing. But when you say relationship foundation, I mean, that's clear. I mean, that's clear what you're trying to do. And then maybe you have a much different understanding of what is it going to take to build a relationship. We know that if we're leading with something that sounds like a sales pitch first, well, in a relationship sense, that's like proposing marriage before we go have coffee. So there's a value into changing some of that terminology that humanizes what we're trying to do. And it also creates something where we're opening up maybe two channels of communication. It's not just us telling you what you need and how we have what you need. We're also opening the doors for them to be able to talk back to us, and we're willing to listen so that we can provide better, you know, services, products, and content even going forward. So there's a lot of value in that. In the book, book here, I wrote chapter 4 in this book, called The Most Amazing Marketing Book Ever. And it's about consumer behavior and how consumers are driving our marketing era. And one of the first things I point out is how Brafton, a well-known marketing agency, they made this infographic on all that basically the history of marketing and how marketing has changed over time. And that time period in the 80s and the 90s, they called the marketing era. And so what that means is we're no longer in the marketing era. And how they define that more or less was kind of a one-way communication thing, where they said this was back when we could rely on TV and radio to do the talking for us. But now our current era is called the relationship era, where it needs to be two-way communication. And there needs to be relationships developed between the brand and the consumer. So once we kind of realize that era has changed, it should radically change everything we're doing. But the good news is unlike when the internet, you know, changed, you know, marketing for all of us, and we all had to kind of study it and test it and figure it out and fill it up with content and see what worked and see what we could, you know, make out of it. Now we're just talking about human behavior. Now we're just talking about what resonates with people's emotions and minds. And there's research that goes hundreds of years back. We don't have to relearn all that stuff, or we do. Maybe we need to relearn a little bit of it, but we don't have to experiment and figure out what makes humans, you know, like and dislike something. I mean, even Guy Kawasaki's older book called Enchantment, How to Enchant People, has a lot of great insight on things you could use to really start tapping into some of those connections with your consumers. And he's got a story in that book about when he was working at Macintosh, how when they built those computers the first time, they told businesses, this is what you guys need. This is what's awesome. And it didn't resonate. And he said the reason why was because we weren't talking their language. We were talking our language. And it's amazing how that was true then and how important it is and how it can make or break you today.
Yes, we had a guest recently called Peter Anthony. He's a guy here in Australia, and he's basically a sales coach, but he talks about collaborative conversations is the sales conversation. It's a collaboration between you and I and figuring out how we can both win out of this conversation. And it's I thought it was a really, really lovely reframe, because, and he did it to me without me knowing. I realized that halfway through he was doing his routine, but he was all asking me questions. And I was doing the majority of the talking, which if you flip it to use the 80s analogy of the marketing, you know, if you watch Wolf of Wall Street, they're talking at people over the phone. They're pitching, nonstop pitching.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, pitching, I have a thing that records me on Zoom, records all my calls and kind of makes notes. Every now and then it will tell me the percentage of time I've been talking on that call. And sometimes it's like 70%, and I'm like, shit, I've got to back off a little bit here. I am talking too much. And, I think having those conversations with people, and not to just keep throwing examples out there. But we had another guy called Ari Gulper on the podcast, and he was also a sales coach. He calls himself the number one authority in trust-based selling.
Okay.
And the thing that he taught me, which we use to this day, and this was almost 2 years ago, this show, it was, don't use the term follow-up after after a presentation, because people know what that means. It means I'm going to have another chance to sell to you. But what he said was, hey, Scott, we've gone through this proposal today. How about we catch up in a couple of days' time? You give me your feedback and any questions you need help with. And that puts you in the driver's seat of that second conversation. We get back on the phone. I've got another chance to build the relationship, not leaving the sale hanging, but it's moving away from the language of marketing and sales. And I think to land the plane a little bit is humanizing that next conversation, not commercializing. It takes it away from being transactional and just continues that relationship.
Yeah, you talk about the Wolf of Wall Street. See, there you go. You had a really good analogy using pop culture. One of my favorite movies is Ford versus Ferrari. And there's a great scene in Ford versus Ferrari where Lee Iacocca is making his pitch to the Ford Motor Company, and all the executives are in that room. And this is when Ford has already acknowledged they're getting their butt kicked in the market and they're just needing ideas. So Lee Iacocca shows up, you know, and he's showing these hot rod cars and showing how, you know, after the war, people want fast cars and women, and we got to tap into this. You know, they're not driving their father's old car anymore and all this stuff. They want to be James Bond and things like that. Well, at one point in time, the executives are, you know, they're just kind of sitting there and, you know, they're like, well, James Bond is a degenerate. And, you know, why would we want to be that? And then he goes, all right, well, let me just put it to you this way. Because they asked him, they said, well, you know, you're overseeing this marketing that's failing. Why should we even listen to you? And he said, because we've been thinking about this wrong. He said, Ferrari is going to go down as one of the most well-known cars in the world. And they're like, Ferrari, we make more car. And this is corporate. This is the corporate mind. They're like, we make more cars. They spend more money on, you know, a handful of cars than we do like toilet paper. And when we out manufacture them all the time. And basically what Lee Iacocca says is, well, here's the thing. People aren't running out to buy Ferrari because of the amount of cars they make or the amount of cars that we make. They want to feel something. They know that Ferrari stands for victory, for, you know, for power, all these emotional feelings, and they want to feel like that. And he says, imagine if when you looked at the Ford logo, they felt that victory. They felt like it meant something. And then suddenly it's like, oh, but it's a great scene. I probably didn't do it exactly the way they do it in the film. I need to see it a few more times, but it's a great example of corporate marketing focusing on number of cars made and how much money we spend. You know, it's almost like, you know, a company leading with we're the biggest, we're the best. Nobody buys based on those things, you know, and it's like Lee Iacocca was saying in that scene, people aren't rushing out to want to get this because they make so many and wow, isn't that amazing? It's because they feel something and they feel like if they're behind the wheel of that car, they're part of that. And my colleague, Mark Schaefer, who led this book, wrote a book just recently called Belonging to the Brand and focused on community marketing and is telling people and has been telling people before it became a thing that sense of belonging is, if you can tap into that, that's huge. And you might be sitting there thinking, well, we do this. We can't create a sense of belonging. Yeah, you can. I mean, if you think about it, you look at a company like North Face. I mean, North Face, it's clothes. But why do people want to wear it? Because North Face came out and said, if you wear this, this is who you are. You're this outdoorsman. You're this type of person. And someone's like, yeah, that's what I am. So I'm going to wear this. You know, Yeti pretty much creates coolers. Mark always talks about, uses the example of Yeti. You know, Yeti has coolers, but where do you see Yeti hats, bumper stickers? Because Yeti has said, if you use our products, this is who you are. And it gave people that sense of belonging. So there are so many other avenues that we can tap into when it comes to providing an emotional connection to a brand. We may surprise what exactly you're capable of.
Wow, Zaruni. Wow, Scott Murray. I think you've hit the absolute nail on the head. And you reminded me of the old Corona ads, you know, from Where You'd Rather Be. Just hot, hot young people just in a golden sunset, having a beer in like some denim shorts.
Hey, and there we go.
I would rather be there right now, Mr. Corona. Nailed it. And that's why people say, why does Coca-Cola just use, you know, people at a party cheersing bottles of Coke? It's like, no one does that, but you still want to be there, don't you? You still want to be in this party.
My wife wants to hang out with the polar bears, so that works too.
100%. I'm sure hanging out with polar bears is nice, you know. Not as nice as it sounds.
I mean, those polar bears, not the ones that'll eat you alive, the friendly ones from the commercials.
And this is where we take a little bit of creative license in our marketing to make it sound like polar bears could be fun to hang out with. Be authentic, but take a little bit of creative license. Scott, this has been amazing today, mate. Thank you so, so much. I've learned a lot. And I think you're saying things that a lot of us maybe know, but you've articulated it in a way that we've realized it. I think we know these things in the back of our mind, but we don't action them. You know, we know we've got to think like our customers, but we don't do it. We've got to humanize our content, but then we actually go for what looks the coolest, what looks the most polished. And you're bringing us back to like, hang on, that's not what it's about. It's about relationships. And we all need to remember that as marketers and business people. So thank you so much for sharing your info with us, Scott.
My pleasure. Thank you, Alex.
The Marketing Superpower Hour is your show, and one I'm definitely going to be checking out because it's, unlike you, audio is where I'm at. Audio is my thing. When I'm walking, when I'm exercising, I listen to audio, and I hope people listening to this show have enjoyed it as much as I have. I'll be back next week with another two episodes of Coaches to the Moon podcast. Until then, ladies and gentlemen, this has been Scott Murray. Thank you so much for listening to the show. Cheers, mate. I'll see you next week. Much love and peace out.
Take care.
Hey, guys. I really hope you enjoyed today's episode. Thank you so much for sticking around to the end. If you love our guests, then in the show notes of this episode, you can find their socials. You can follow them. You can learn more about all the free resources and programs they've got. I highly recommend you do it. Until then, thank you so much. I'll be back here next week with Coaches to the Moon. Have an amazing day. Peace out.
Coaches to the Moon will be back next week. Until then, reach us on Facebook at To The Moon Digital Marketing.